Chapter 3 Sambhavami Yuge Yuge. I incarnate again and again. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyuttanam adharmasya tathatmanam srujamyaham paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya chatushkritam dharma sansthapanarthaya sambhavami yuge yuge. Srimad Bhagavad Gita Chapter 4 Puttavardhani. The present-day village of Puttaparthi was known in olden times as Golappalli, the village of cowherds. The whole area was populated with cowherds and their cows. One day, a cowherd of the village noticed that one of his cows had returned from grazing fields with an empty udder. This continued to happen for the next several days. He decided to stalk her quietly to the fields to find out who might be stealing her milk. The cow went as usual to the woods with the keeper, watching her every movement with peeled eyes. She approached a snake hill, out of which emerged a wondrous serpent, wound itself around the cow's hind legs, and fed itself from the udder without hurting the cow. The cow had lost his temper. It did not occur to him that this serpent might be something uncommon or divine. He picked up a heavy stone and hurled it at the serpent. Blood flowed out and stained the stone. The serpent died. Ever since that incident, cowherd families of Golappalli gradually declined in numbers and serpent hills proliferated all over. People believed that the dying serpent cursed the villagers, which was the root cause of their misery. As time passed, Golappalli acquired the dubious distinction of being known as Puttavardhani, place where snake hills abound. The contrite villagers took the blood-stained stone which had killed the serpent, named it Gopala Swami, Krishna the cowherd, and installed it in the village for regular worship. The charming name of Krishna evokes the childhood pranks and amusing frolics of Lord Krishna, who grew up among cowherds. As a boy, he stole milk, butter and curds playfully to feed himself and his cohorts and playmates. The villagers worshipped the stone as Krishna, the cowherd, as an act of penitence and atonement. Soon enough, the village prospered and grew and came to be known as Puttaparthi. During the reign of the great ruler, Sri Krishna Deva Raya of the Vijayanagar Empire, it earned renown as a stronghold of brave warriors who lent their services to the royal forces. A temple was built and elaborate arrangements were initiated for regular rituals of worship in the traditional manner, that is, offer of puja, lighting of the sacred lamp, offer of incense and naivedyam to the deity, and so on. The prosperity of the village grew more and more. After the advent of Bhagavan Sri Satyasai, he confirmed the divinity of that deity. At his instance, bathing of the deity, abhishekam, and application of sandalwood paste all over were introduced. To the wonderment of the devotees, the stone revealed the divine form of Lord Sri Krishna with flute in hand. There is in Puttaparthi a distinguished and devout family with a family name of Ratnakara. A great saint called Venka Avadhuta was one of their ancestors. The paternal grandfather of Satyasai, named Kondamaraju, was a highly evolved soul and led a life of devotion to God. he could recite from memory stories and verses from the sacred epics of Sri Mahabhagavat and Ramayana. Inspired by a dream, he built a temple for goddess Satyabhama Devi, the consort of Lord Krishna. It is now known in Puttaparthi as Satyamma's temple. Lakshmamma was Kondamma Raju's wife. The saintly couple had two sons. In memory of Venka Avaduta, they were named Pedda, the elder Venkamma Raju, and Chinna, the younger Venkamma Raju. Both of them, like their father, became accomplished singers of devotional verses and songs. Ishwaramma. Some close relatives of Kondamma Raju were residing in a village called Kolimikuntla in the Koyalakuntla taluka of Kurnool district. Their family name was Misaraganda. Suparaju of that family built a temple for Lord Shiva in his village. While the temple was under construction, Subbaraju was blessed with a female baby who was named Namagiri. While returning from a pilgrimage, Kondamma Raju happened to visit that village. He was very much distressed to find that his relatives were leading uneasy lives due to the depredations of dacoits active in that region. He invited them to come over and take permanent residence in the village of Karnata Nagapalli on the other bank of the river Chitravati, right opposite to Puttaparthi, which he said would be a safe haven. As an added incentive, he gave word that he would accept Namagiri as his daughter-in-law. The Misaraganda family soon shifted and settled down in Karnata Nagapalli and took up farming. As divinely ordained, Subbaraju's daughter was wedded to Pedda Venkamma Raju. Not quite pleased with the name his daughter-in-law was given by her parents, Kondamma Raju changed it to Ishwaramma, mother of Lord Ishwara, that is Lord Shiva. That name eventually proved not only quite appropriate, but also prophetic. The devout couple begot a son, Seshamma Raju, and two daughters, Venkamma and Parvatamma. To the great distress of Lakshmamma, four miscarriages followed. She earnestly prayed to God to bless her family with another child. Swami's incarnation. The moment of divine fulfillment was about to dawn. The prayers of numberless saints, sages and renunciates for the incarnation of God on earth were about to be answered. The agony of suffering humanity moved the ever-merciful Supreme Divinity. Ishwaramma was again pregnant for the eighth time. Quite significantly, Lord Krishna was born as the eighth child of his mother, Devaki Devi. The inscrutable, the incomprehensible, the universal absolute was now about to reveal himself. Musical instruments in the house, like mridangam, percussion instrument, and tanpura, stringed instrument, used to produce of their own accord musical sounds. At this extraordinary occurrence, people were surprised and also delighted, but were at the same time confused and concerned. Pedda Venkamma Raju went all the way to the nearby town of Bukkapatnam to consult astrologers. After carefully going through ancient texts, the astrologers inquired whether any lady in the house was pregnant. When the reply was affirmative, the astrologer said, "For the pleasure of the child in the womb, celestial musicians are providing entertainment. When divine incarnations are about to take place, such unusual incidents happen." They showed relevant parts of astrological treatises to Pedda Venkamma Raju in support of their opinion. It was 23rd November 1926. according to the Hindu calendar, it corresponded to Somabar, Monday, Tadiya, the third day after the full moon, Kartika month, Akshaya year, and Ardra star. Hindus consider Mondays of the Kartika month as favorite days of Lord Shiva and perform special worship. From 4 a.m. on that day, Lakshmamma was deeply absorbed in the worship of Lord Sri Satyanarayana Swami being performed in the nearby house of a Purohit. She was called several times as her daughter-in-law's delivery was imminent. But she ignored the calls. She decided not to return home without seeing the puja through and receiving the puja prasadam. She sat through and did indeed carry the prasadam home. She gave prasadam to her daughter-in-law. It was now 5:60 a.m. Cool breezes were wafting softly. Little bells on the top of the temple pillar, Dvajasthambam, were producing gentle and melodious sounds. Inside the house, musical notes from the instruments spontaneously playing on their own were softly reverberating. At that wondrous moment, Sri Satya Sai, the divine incarnation, was born. He had a tiny black mole, birthmark, on his left cheek. He had also another mole on his bosom, like the Srivatsa ornament adorning the bosom of Lord Mahavishnu. On his soles could be discerned the signs of Sanka, the conch, and Chakra, the circular disc, which are insignia of divinity. Lakshmamma, Ishwaramma's mother-in-law, placed the newborn baby delicately on palm leaves, as tradition demanded, in a corner of the delivery room. A little later, she noticed a slight movement of the baby's bed sheets. When she picked up the baby, she found, to her dismay, a coiled cobra below the bed. True enough, Puttaparthi knew no dearth of snakes, but it was nevertheless quite unusual for a coiled cobra positioning itself as bed for a newborn baby right in the delivery room. After the flutter caused by its presence cooled down, the snake was searched but could not be found. There is absolutely no doubt that the snake was none other than Adishesha, the divine serpent who serves as bed for Lord Sri Mahavishnu in Vaikuntha. This is the very first demonstration of the divinity of Sri Satya Sai. As the baby was born immediately after his mother had partaken of the prasadam of Lord Sri Satyanarayana Swami, he was given the name of Satyanarayana. The old man Kondamma Raju was immensely delighted with this name, for he was reminded of the incident in the Sri Mahabhagavat when Lord Sri Krishna was born as the human incarnation of Lord Narayana. Lord Brahma presented himself before the child and paid homage thus: Satyavratam, Satyaparam, Trisatyam, Satyasya Yonim, Nihitam Cha Satye, Satyasya Satyam, Rita Satya Netram, Satya Atmakam, Tvam Sharanam Prasanna. O Lord, you are the embodiment of truth. In fact, you are the truth itself. Only you are the eternal truth. Truth is the only path to reach you. O personification of truth, I surrender to thee. Even if one goes by the name given to the little baby, Satyam, it is evident that he is truly Lord Sri Narayana and the embodiment of truth, Satyam. The inner, profound spiritual significance of the word Satya has come out in all its striking appropriateness in Swami's life. Ritam and Satyam are the two bejeweled ornaments of the ears of Shruti Mata, Veda Mata, the mother goddess of the Vedas. When we contemplate deeply on their meaning and spiritual significance, even new beauties are revealed to us. Satyam, eternal truth, and Nityam, knowing no beginning or end, are worth meditating on. Not conception, but advent. In the Sri Mahabhagavat, it has been stated that Lord Narayana intended to incarnate on this earth as Sri Krishna and entered the womb of Devaki Devi. After Bhagavan Satyasai proclaimed, "I am that Krishna of yore," a doubt arose in the mind of a learned scholar named Sangobhatla Rama Sharma. He was the scholar laureate, Asthana Pandit of the ruler of Venkatagiri. And he was a learned scholar of scriptures and sacred epics. One day he happened to be with Sri Satyasai Baba in the mandir when spiritual matters were being discussed. He asked, "Swami, was your birth through normal conception, prasavam, or by advent, pravesham?" Everyone present was intrigued and somewhat surprised. "What is this odd question? And in any case, what is its propriety?" they wondered. But Swami certainly knew the inner substance and profound significance of the question. He turned towards Ishwaramma, the mother, who was sitting in the front row, and said, "Tell Rama Sharma what happened on that day when you were lifting water from the well." Ishwaramma then narrated her experience. "When I was lifting water from the well," she said, "suddenly I saw a ball of bluish sparkling light rolling down from the sky. It entered my body. I lost consciousness. When I regained my senses with ministrations of my mother-in-law, I told her what had happened. She advised me not to breathe a word about it to anyone, because people might draw all sorts of undesirable and funny inferences." Bhagwan Sri Satyasai now turned to Rama Sharma and said, "Do you now understand, Rama Sharma? My birth was not through conception, but by advent." Kundamaraju used to take this extraordinary child into his puja room and seat him there as he would perform the worship. He would note that the child's presence gave him immense tranquility of mind and he could effortlessly concentrate on God in meditation. Why not? It is perfectly understandable. Whoever enthrones Bhagavan in his heart is bound to experience transcendental peace, which is something that every devotee knows from personal experience. The baby was extremely handsome. Neighboring women folk used to spend hours and hours playing with him, caressing him and embracing him. Ishwaramma never bothered to know what caste or community of faith they belonged to. She raised no objection whatsoever. The baby too learned to love them and like their company. He would often run away from his mother's lap to the company of others. He was indeed restless, except in their company. Bhagavan Satyasai once declared that he would unfailingly go to those who yearned for him wholeheartedly. When we hear of his childhood pranks and plays, we realize that even as a child, he had been practicing what he declared much later, after he grew up. The house next to the one adjoining Kondamaraju's belonged to a Karanam, village revenue official. The lady of the house was Subbamma. Whenever she took the charming child in her arms, his face would glow in happiness. He would titter with delight and she would experience supreme joy. She had no children of her own. She often took this child to her home as proudly as she was bringing home precious treasures. She smothered him with her motherly love. Subbamma's family was a Brahmin family and was vegetarian in food habits. as Satyam always insisted on going to her house and found much happiness there, people used to observe that like his grandfather Kondamma Raju, little Satyam also would be a vegetarian. And hence he preferred to spend much of his time in the environment of Subbamma's house. In fact, Satyam was not as happy in his own house as he was in Subbamma's. Some of his relatives of Kondamma Raju's family used to comment that Ishwaramma was Devaki, the natal mother of Lord Krishna, while Subbamma was Yashoda, his foster mother. Another unusual feature of Satyam was that he never used to ask for any particular thing to eat, nor for any particular piece of clothing. Clothes were used to be brought from the neighboring towns of Hindupuram and Anantapuram for all children in the family. The little ones would gather around them and eagerly snatch up pieces they preferred. But Satyam would cheerfully accept whatever was left behind. He never indicated that he had any choice of his own. There was nothing that he would particularly prefer. On the other hand, when he saw the other children in happiness, Satyam's face would bloom with pleasure and satisfaction. "Your happiness is my food," Swami declared many years later. That surely must have held true even when Satyam was a mere child. He was full of pity, compassion, love and sympathy for any living being subjected to hardship and grief. A few playful boys once collected about a dozen frogs and were carrying them in a basket. They planned to have fun by subjecting the poor creatures to some sort of torture. Satyam requested that they be freed. The boys did not agree. Suddenly, Satyam transformed them into pigeons through his divine will. He told them that there were no frogs in their basket. When they disbelievingly opened the lid to see, the birds escaped into the sky. We can read a spiritual meaning too in this incident. From that day to this day, Bhagavan has been transforming ordinary individuals who are entrapped and living like frogs in the deep mire of ignorance into strong human beings who are bold and happy and capable of soaring free in the spiritual firmament like birds in skies. Even as a little boy, Satyam was fond of natural beauty. He spent much time contemplating nature. Mountain peaks, stars and sky gave him profound happiness as he contemplated them spellbound. At such times, he appeared serene and serious, way beyond his tender age. The women of Puttaparthi, who had seen him so lost in his own thoughts, used to refer to him as Brahmanyani, one who had attained supreme realization. They might have, no doubt, said so in mirth and frolic. They could never suspect that the boy they were making fun of was indeed a Brahmanyani. Divine touch. Ishwaramma and Karanam Subbamma would often sit at dusk in the front portico of their houses overlooking the street and spend time in conversation. Right in front of them in the street, Satyam would wear a bandage across his eyes and play hide and seek with his colleagues. That was the time when cattle headed home from pasture. There was always the risk of unruly animals trampling passers-by. Ishwaramma would naturally feel apprehensive about her darling child's safety. But Subbamma would always reassure her, "Calm yourself and just keep watching. Nothing untoward will happen." The blindfolded Satyam would catch hold of some rogue animal. Under his gentle touch, the animal would become docile, lower its head, and move away harmlessly. Such incidents used to leave onlookers baffled. Probably because Satyam was born under the auspicious influence of Artha star, his heart would melt at the very sight of suffering. Ardra in Sanskrit means compassionate. If a hungry person stood at his door, Satyam would run inside, bring some food and place it affectionately in the outstretched hands. The glow of happiness in the eyes of the hungry person would fill Satyam's heart with satisfaction. He used to bring to his home persons shivering from cold and gave them clothes to cover themselves. It was customary for people to carry fowl upside down by their legs, bound together and heads hanging down, a position torturous to the poor birds. Bullocks were goaded to move faster by twisting their tails cruelly. At the sight of such insensate cruelty, Satyam would suffer the agony of the poor birds and animals in himself. After finishing school in Puttaparthi, Satyam went to the nearby town of Bukkapatnam and enrolled in the middle school. The loving mother watched with bated breath as her little child prepared day after day to go to Bukkapatnam. He was hardly out of his cradle, but now he had to walk all the way to town. Satyam would put on a white shirt and shorts, apply vibhuti on his forehead, and a red dot of vermilion to lend accent to it. With a small bag containing his simple midday meal of cooked ragi, a coarse grain, in one hand, and a bag of books in the other, he would bid her goodbye every morning. The poor lady's eyes would swim in tears. He would leave home at about 8:30 a.m. and return only at dusk. Until then, how could she endure the agony of his absence? Sadness haunted her every moment of the day. His fellow pupils at school were envious of Satyam. He was evidently the cynosure because of his excellent sense of cleanliness and immaculate orderliness. As soon as the boys stepped out of the village, they would catch hold of Satyam and duck him in the river Chitravati to make his spotless white clothes dirtier than theirs. Their dirty deed accomplished, they would feel happy and fulfilled. But never would Satyam complain to his beloved mother against them. The teacher's chair. In the school in Bukkapatnam, a teacher by name Kondappa was dictating notes to his pupils, who were assiduously taking them down. Satyam alone was not doing so, which annoyed the teacher. How could he know that Satyam, the all-knowing, all-comprehending, had no need for taking down any notes? He ordered Satyam to stand upon the bench, a punishment usually meted out to delinquent boys. Satyam meekly obeyed. Time passed and the bell struck to mark the end of that class, and Kondappa had to leave. Though he tried to get out of his chair, he could not, as it stuck to his bottom. The teacher who was to take the next class was Mehboob Khan. He came in and understood the situation. He asked Satyam to sit down and be seated. As soon as he took a seat, Kondappa got released from his own chair. This was but one small leela, playful prank of Satyam, that was played merely to demonstrate that he was no ordinary run-of-the-mill schoolboy. News of this episode soon spread in Bukkapatnam and caused some unrest too. The incident proves that an incarnation of God cannot be bound by man-made limitations. In due course, Kondappa recognized Satyam's divinity and also wrote and published some poems in his praise. When the story of the teacher's chair reached Ishwaramma, she feared for the future of her boy's education. She cautioned Satyam, "If you do not study hard and succeed in your schooling, you have no future but to eke out a living by tending cattle." Well, can the word of Bhagavan's mother ever go wrong? Swami did not work hard at his studies in school. But as his divine mother had warned, he is certainly tending cattle. What are the animals now in his care? All living beings are now under his care and protection. That is why he has verily become Pashupati, the Lord of animals, one of the attributes of Lord Shiva. His simple-minded mother had never dreamt that her darling child, so remiss at school, would eventually take up such a glorious job, that of minding the universe as Bhagavan. The end of the year saw Satyam appearing for the final examinations held in the town of Penugonda. He stood first, and the people of Penugonda took out a grand procession in honor of this brilliant boy. In her heart of hearts, Ishwaramma was delighted at the success of her charming boy. But she was at the same time worried that this might arouse more jealousy amongst other boys against him. Often did she wonder and feel astonished at some of the words uttered by Satyam. His decisions and conclusions, the sharpness of his views, and the manner in which he expounded them. Supama's husband, the Karanam, was sporting a mustache all too odd and prominent, somewhat in the style of Hitler. His conduct was also rather unusual. Satyam composed songs making fun of him and organized his colleagues to sing them in public. Ishwaramma would not approve of such mischievous activities. She entrusted the task of correcting Satyam, of all people, to Subbamma. Subbamma admonished Ishwaramma, "That little guru, master, knows how to distinguish between good and bad. Leave it to him and let him be." With a mere wave of hand, Satyam would materialize whatever his companions asked for, be it a fruit or a flower or sweets. When they asked to know where he was getting them from, he merely said that some celestial beings were giving them to him. Yes, there can be no doubt about what he claimed. Swami is the supreme master. It is but natural that heavenly beings should serve him with whatever he demands. Tiger hunter chided. It was around noon one day when a driver in uniform was noticed striding into Puttaparthi. As he walked in, birds on the branches of trees raised loud cries of fear and distress. Satyam was sitting in the front portico of Karanam Subbamma's house, conversing with his friends. As the driver stepped up there, the children scattered in fright. The man told Satyam that his master's jeep got stranded on the other bank of the river Chitravati. The master was in hot temper. Having heard that a boy of miracles was in this village, he had come here to obtain some vibhuti if it could get the master out of his problem. Satyam agreed to follow him to the jeep. The master was proudly stroking the dead body of a tigress, evidently shot by him in the forest. Satyam said to him, "What harm has this poor animal done to you? Why have you killed it for no reason? Her two little cubs are missing their mother and are feeling miserable. It was I who made your vehicle break down to make you realize this. Go back to those little motherless cubs, rescue them and entrust them to the care of a proper zoo. Never should you kill a living being for your own pleasure and enjoyment. You might shoot, but only with a camera, not with a gun. That would bring you name and fame." Surprisingly, the engine of the vehicle sprang to life with a mere touch of Satyam, and it went back the way it had come. Pedda Venkama Raju, Satyam's father, was in panic at home. For defying an Englishman, that too, one who was sporting a gun, his little son might invite trouble from the police. On the other hand, the Englishman felt remorseful. Sometime later, he brought the skin of the dead tigress and offered it to serve as footrest for Satyam. Even today, it is there in Prashanti Nilayam, near Swami's throne, serving Swami as his footrest. Each and every incident of Swami's life serves as a mirror, reflecting the essentiality of Satyam's divine personality. Swami is the personification of Ahimsa, principle of non-violence, embodiment of compassion and pity for dumb creatures. He is Jesus Christ and Bhagwan Buddha personified. Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba is the teacher of teachers.